probably did that for very intentionally, because there's a lot of different ways they interpreted. So, imagine we'll move on from Daniel, not sure what's next after this. But we do have some neat stories here in the middle parts of Daniel, which we've all heard of Daniel in the lion's den. But we're going to go through, want to point out, Daniel goes through several kings here. Close watching him, so I'm slowing down. She had to get at least one hug. Two. Good morning. Now I bet you. I'm blessed. But starting off, we ended last week in Daniel chapter 4. We talked a little bit about it, but King Nebuchadnezzar is now being ushered out. We talked about him last week. Spending seven periods of time as a beast of the field before God pulls him out of it. So God humbles King Nebuchadnezzar, and due to that, got Nebuchadnezzar's attention. But then Nebuchadnezzar's son is about to take over, and Daniel also serves for two other kings. And each time, which is an incredibly neat story, or theme to track, each time God puts Daniel high up for whoever he served. And it happens in different ways each time. We talked about Nebuchadnezzar, it was interpreting dreams. So Daniel interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dreams with King Belshazzar. It's a little bit different, but along the same lines. And I'm going to go to Daniel chapter 5, verse 13. Then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king answered and said to Daniel, "You are that Daniel, one of the exiles of Judah, whom the king my father brought from Judah. I have heard of you that the spirit of the gods is in you, and that light and understanding excellent wisdom are found in you. Now, the wise men, the enchanters, have been brought in before me to read this writing and to make known to me its interpretation, but they could not show the interpretation of the matter. But I have heard that you can give interpretations and solve problems. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered and said before the king, "Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another. Nevertheless, I'll read the writing to the king and make known to him the interpretation. O king, the most high God, gave Nebuchadnezzar your father kingship and greatness and glory and majesty. And because of the greatness that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled in fear before him. Whom he would, he killed, and whom he would, he kept alive. Whom he would, he raised up, and whom he would, he humbled. But when his heart was lifted up, and his spirit has hardened, so that he dealt proudly, he was brought down from his kingly throne, and his glory was taken from him. He was driven from among the children of mankind, and his mind was made like that of a beast, and his dwelling was with wild donkeys. He was fed grass like an ox, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, until he knew that the most Most High God rules the kingdom of mankind and sets over it whom he will. And you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, though you knew all this. But you have lifted up yourself against the Lord of heaven, and the vessels of his house have been brought in before you. And you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see or hear or know, but the God in whose hand is your breath, and whose are all your ways you have not honored. Then from his presence the hand was sent, and this writing was inscribed. And this is the writing that was inscribed. Mene, mene, tekel, and person. This is the interpretation of the matter. Mene, God has numbered the days of your kingdom and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Paris, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel's clothes of purple and a chain of gold was put around his neck, and a proclamation was made about him that he should be the third ruler of the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar the Chaldean was killed, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king plans to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint or any fault, because he was faithful, and no error or fault was found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." It's a pretty cool testament. All these people are after him. The word that comes into my mind is above reproach. Daniel's acting above reproach in every regard. He set over the king's stuff, and all these satraps give him their account, and he's over all this, and the king's intent is to put him over all the land. And the officials are coming against him, saying, "Hey, we gotta figure out some way to knock this dude off of his pedestal." And they do some digging, and they keep digging, and what do they say? "We're not going to find anything against this guy unless we figure out something that goes against the law of his God." I fast forward all the way to the Sermon on the Mount, when it says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for my sake." That's Daniel right here. And Jesus quotes Daniel a lot, but I think this is the perfect example. Daniel's not giving people a target. Daniel's not doing anything other than acting as a vessel of God, doing God's work. And what does everybody say? There's nothing we can bring against them, unless we figure out a way to make it illegal to make the laws go against each other. We got to figure something out, because our law permits Daniel's God. So what should we do? We got to attack his God. "Blessed are those who are persecuted for my sake." We like to get that all mixed up nowadays and say, well, blessed are those who are persecuted. Well, some people are persecuted probably fairly properly. there's penalties for actions just in the country and in law, and for some reason we like to put this blanket statement. You want somebody that's doing it well, that can be an example for you? This is it. Because tons of people right now are trying to knock him off. And when they go digging, they say, this dude's clean. This dude does everything by the book. Kevin likes to say that I'm a rule bender. Or do you say I'm a breaker?
Breaker.
I'm a rule breaker. That's not Daniel. Daniel's not playing in the grave. That's the best example we can take. Because I guarantee that if somebody really wanted to come after me, it wouldn't take that much digging to find something disturbing. Right? It wouldn't. They go digging into Daniel and they say, man, the only play we have against this guy is his God. Because he's so devoted to his God that that's his fault. That's his fall. And then I love VeggieTales. It's the VeggieTales story, right? They say they can't pray to any other God, and they find Daniel praying to God. And you see the king in that moment become distraught. Why? I imagine in that moment the king kind of knows that he's been played. And now he's stuck in the position of, well, if I let him off, what does my word carry? If I don't let him off, man, I'm going against somebody who I know his God and what he's done. I've heard stories of his God. I'm losing my most trusted official. Because guess what? Everybody behind Daniel's conniving and scheming. Who wants that? To be over your household. Nobody. So the king in this moment stuck between following through with what he says is going to happen and the gut-wrenching thought of losing Daniel, somebody who he trusts, who he wants to put over everything. He's just that kind of guy. Because for three kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and now Darius, all three kings have done what with Daniel? Raise him up. Why? He's that kind of guy. And in this instance, you have a bunch of scheming people that go digging into him and figure out, hey, we got to do something against this guy. And they do it, and it works. So their masterful plan. You want a Messiah connection? What does everybody think is going to happen when the Messiah dies?
It's over.
This is a beautiful parallel of Christ. Because these people who are scheming against Daniel think what's going to happen when they throw him in the lion's den. So, right? Boom. Now I can take my place as a higher up, and this guy who makes me fall in line and is honest and makes everybody abide by the rules won't be over me, so I can go back to doing my swindling and all my jicky stuff. fight, a lost leg, nothing. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace. Just as everybody gets super excited when, I'm not going to say everybody, a lot of people get super excited when Christ is nailed to the cross. Then what happens? Life begins. A promise fulfilled. An opportunity at eternity. See, I imagine the Sanhedrin that was calling for his head was super excited. Why? Because I imagine, and they talk about it before, that there's been people claiming outlandish things before Christ. And they've dealt with those guys the same way that they dealt with Christ. And what's come of it? Nothing. The rebellion falters. Everybody disperse, right? It's the cutting the head off the snake narrative. What happens when Christ dies? You and I are still talking about him 2,000 years later. And you have this beautiful picture over and over in the Bible of somebody being delivered from imminent death to carry on God's work. And then you have the ultimate sacrifice, Christ, that gets led to the cross, crucified. And guess what? That's where a lot of our stories begin. Because if that didn't happen, what would we be doing? Who knows? Maybe waiting. Like some people still are today. But Daniel gets put in this impossible position, and he follows through with what is he is supposed to do. And I want to make a parallel with, this seems crazy, but I'm going to make this just blanket statement. It doesn't seem crazy, actually. I take that back. It seems more right than anything else. How many of you have hidden or maybe pulled a couple punches when you're speaking the truth because you're not sure how it's going to affect you? Maybe. Approached by an employer or an incredibly good friend that you love to death and they're struggling with something, and instead of speaking the truth, you give a twisted half-truth. And God's saying, hey, I don't care if you lose a friend, if you get fired from your job. Guess what I got going that you don't? I got you. I'm in control. And Daniel is in the place of a place of honor, being put over all these people, all these satraps, which are just pretty much government officials. Who would like to keep that job? He's probably living in the castle, right? He could probably have whatever he wanted. Right before they clothed him in purple garments, meaning royalty, and put a gold chain around his neck. And I mean, that's a good paying job. And he could have just fallen in line, but what would he do if he just falls in line? The guy who put him there, in that spot, you're going to let him put you in that spot and then turn around and spit on him. What did he just say to Belshazzar? He's Belteshazzar. King Belshazzar. He just said, listen, this is the account of your father. God humbled him. It starts with, hey, God put him as the high king. God put him in his place, and then he got a little bit sideways, and then guess what God came back to do? Humble him. So Daniel just previously talked to Belshazzar and said, listen, I know the guy that makes all this happen, that puts kings in place, that brings up kingdoms and tears them down. And you, Belshazzar, have not humbled yourself before God. Instead, you took all the stuff that your father took from the temple years and years ago, that you knew that your father just left alone, because why? He knows who that belongs to. And you brought it out and you started giving it to the lords and letting them drink wine out of the goblets, and you just made an abomination of all the temple artifacts. So your days are numbered. The next day, what happens? He dies. That's a small number. And then the next guy puts him in place, and people are scheming, conniving, and doing everything they can. But what happens to Daniel every time? And I don't want to get this twisted, because what I just said makes it sound like, hey, y'all just follow it and nothing bad's going to happen to you, right? Not true. We see the opposite of that several times in the Bible, but what is Daniel focused on? God. The whole time. He allows God to work through him the whole time. I wish we could get to it, but I only have a few more minutes left. There's an incredible prayer, confession, poem in Daniel that I would encourage you to read, because it's not really talked about in your book. Let me find it so I can give y'all a place to read it. It is an incredible prayer. That Daniel prays. I should have marked it. I don't know how to use this Kindle real well yet.
Put in 9.
I believe so. But yeah, I think it's actually the very first part of 9. I'm going to read it real fast because this is a pretty powerful testament to where Daniel's at. Daniel's prayer for his people. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, by descent a Mede, who was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, perceived in the books of the number of years that according to the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet, must pass before the end of the desolation of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. So what's Daniel start this off with? He said, Lord, I know you told Josiah we're 70 years away from the end of this. What's he saying? Feel like we should be about out of this, God. Then I turned my face to the Lord God, seeking him by prayer and pleas for mercy. With fasting and sackcloth and ashes, I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession. Made what? Confession. You're thinking, what would Daniel have to confess about, right? Saying, O Lord, the great and awesome God, who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments. We have sinned and done wrong and acted wickedly and rebelled, turning aside from your commandments and rules. We have not listened to your servants, the prophets, who spoke in your name to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, and to all the people of the land. To you, O Lord, belongs righteousness, but to us, open shame. What does he keep saying? We? Not I. We. Who's he talking about? People of Israel. But to us open shame, as at this day to the men of Judah, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and to all Israel, those who are near and those who are far away, in all the lands to which you have driven them, because of the treachery that they have committed against you. To us, O Lord, belongs open shame, to our kings, to our princes, and to our fathers, because we have sinned against you. To the Lord our God belong mercy and forgiveness, for we have rebelled against him and have not obeyed the voice of the Lord our God by walking in his laws, which he set before us and his servants, the prophets. All Israel has transgressed your law and turned aside, refusing to obey your voice and the curse and oath that are written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, have been poured out upon us because we have sinned against him. He has confirmed his words which he spoke against us and against our rulers who ruled us by bringing upon us great calamity. For under the whole heaven there has not been done anything like what has been done against Jerusalem. As it is written in the law of Moses, all this calamity has come upon us, yet we have not entreated the favor of the Lord our God, turning from our iniquities and gaining insight by your truth. Therefore the Lord has kept ready the calamity and brought it upon us. For the Lord our God is righteous in all the works that he has done, and we have not obeyed his voice. And now, O Lord our God, who brought your people out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand and have made a name for yourself, as at this day we have sinned, we have done wickedly. O Lord, according to all your righteous acts, let your anger and your wrath turn away from your city, Jerusalem, your holy hill, because for our sins and for the iniquities of our fathers, Jerusalem and your people have become a byword among all who are around us. Now therefore, O Lord, our God, listen to the prayer of your servant and to his pleas for mercy, for your own sake, O Lord. Make your face to shine upon your sanctuary, which is desolate. O my God, incline your ear to hear, open your eyes and see our desolations and the city that is called by your name. For we do not present our pleas before you because of our righteousness, but because of your great mercy, O Lord. Hear, O Lord, forgive. O Lord, pay attention and act. Delay not for your own sake, O my God, because your city and your people are called by your name. And right after it, an angel, says Gabriel, brings an answer, and it is probably not the answer that Daniel was hoping for. The angel says, hey, you got to go. It's the whole 7 times 70 bit. But in this, I want us to see how Daniel prays. There's a humility about that prayer I hope we can all adopt. Because what does Daniel say? And it's something that you'll hear in Romans that Paul starts, I think you said it last week, maybe, Kevin, that Paul says, I'm the worst sinner. Was that last week? Paul comes to God, or presents himself out of immense humility. And I think if you track prayers throughout the Bible, you can see that. Who likes to go to God and say, hey, Lord, I know I deserve way worse. But who likes to go to God and say, I am incredibly messed up, and only by your grace do I have an opportunity to even talk to you? In Daniel's case, a guy who probably, if we were to use biblical language and go back to the days of Noah, would have been considered righteous in his time. A guy who seems to have it pretty screwed on straight, that you don't see the pitfall narratives that you do on a lot of other places. And what does he say? Man, we're not worthy. And not for anything that we've done, God. But out of your mercy, will you deliver us? This guy could have been saying, look, I've been doing the right things for 80 years. Have you forgotten about me? I'm still here, God. I'm still counseling all these foreign kings in your ways. And by my calculation, 7 years is coming to a close. Where are you at? Why does he come to that prayer? You can see his head at the beginning saying, hey, it's been 7 years, what's going on? And then the prayer was, man, I know we don't deserve it. And we have generations of iniquities as your people. But Lord, please bring us out. Wow. I hope we can adopt that. I know we bounced around and covered a lot of ground today, but I would encourage y'all to read that prayer a few more times, look at what's happening in Daniel's life at the time. And hopefully that instills in us a little bit more humility than we have. Maybe that will squash the feeling. How many of y'all felt like you deserved something? Probably. If you work really hard at something, you do something really well, or whatever the case may be, and you're like, man, I deserve this. And you don't see that attitude, biblically speaking. If we're going to keep our eyes on the unseen and what's eternal, what do we deserve? Hell. Justice. It's a little bit of a different attitude. Thank y'all for being here. Appreciate you guys. We have one review week, which I'm actually